Happy New Year to you in jail.
The 19 best true crime properties I consumed in 2019. It's The Blotter Presents, episode 126. Literally any excuse to use that clip from It's a Wonderful Life, and for once, it's actually apropos. A very happy new year to you all, listeners, and welcome to a quick New Year's Day edition of The Blotter Presents, the best true crime stuff I watched, read, and or listened to in 2019. It might not have come out in 2019, but time is a flat circle here at Blotter HQ. Speaking of here at Blotter HQ, an apology in advance if any demolition noise from next door is bleeding into the mic. As I record this, it's still New Year's Eve, and these dudes have not taken or given me a day off since Christmas. But like the song says, we'll have to muddle through somehow. I'll keep it short and no more singing. This is the true crime that was worth my time in 2019, and it happened to come out to a list of 19 items. Well, by happened to, I really mean that I, quote, happened to do a count at some point to see how much more narrowing down I had to force myself to do. And when I saw that it totaled 19, I used that neatness as an excuse to stop kicking things off the list. But it was a good year in the genre, at least at this desk. Yeah, there was some garbage, but there was also some pretty impressive work. And I'm glad I made myself make this list, because it means I can quickly spotlight some stuff from, like, February of 2019 that you might have forgotten about also. I'm going to go in alphabetical order here. The show notes will have links to the corresponding episode, or in some cases to outside coverage that I think is noteworthy. If you've got the rest of this week off and you already burned through your Christmas books, you might want to give a handful of these another look. Because they're all most wanted in today's episode, even though some of them are older than 2019. Not our first entry, Abducted in Plain Sight. I talked about this documentary in a brief, then interviewed the director in a segment on the main podcast. Skye Borgman's 2017 doc is on Netflix, and early in the year it was on everyone's lips. Phrasing, sorry. The film is, per Wikipedia, about, quote, the kidnappings, yes, plural, of Jan Broberg Felt, an Idaho teenager who was abducted by her neighbor Robert Birchtold in the 1970s on two separate occasions, end quote. It's not a perfect documentary, and it has some frustrating bits, but there aren't any dull moments. Number 2, The Act. Hulu's scripted take on the Dee Dee and Gypsy Blanchard story, The Act featured fantastic performances from leads Patricia Arquette and Joey King, top-notch production design, and a very smart sense of how much of our fascination with this particular case, I mean, with most cases, really, let's face it, but anyway, lives in the unknowable parts of it, the things that died with Dee Dee. Michelle Dean's original reporting for BuzzFeed is fantastic, and it's not like you need The Act, but if you've got the time to spare, pair the series with a reread. Next up is At the Heart of Gold. I'm sorry, first, that more of Aaron Lee Carr's uniformly great work in 2019 didn't make my list, and second, that this harrowing account of Larry Nassar's monstrous abuses of pretty much every gymnast who crossed his path is the one I felt obliged to go with. Stephanie Early Greed and I both cried more than once watching this one, and it's not an enjoyable sit, but it's affecting and important, and it's on HBO Go and HBO On Demand. Into the Bees with Bundyville's second season. Oregon Public Broadcasting and Long Reads teamed up for the second season of Bundyville called The Remnant, which, quote, explores the world beyond the Bundy family and the armed uprisings they inspired. This series investigates extremist violence that results from the conspiracy theories of the anti-government movement, who is inspiring that violence and who stands to benefit, end quote. Most of the one-star reviews of this podcast complain that Leah Sottile's so-called liberal bias ruins the storytelling, so if that's an issue for you, I guess don't listen to it. Or to this podcast anymore. One of the things I thought set Bundyville the Remnant apart is how low-key Sottile is in describing the extremists, whether it's their beliefs or their knee-jerk actions. Some commentators, whose names rhyme with Flara Flunting, might have put in a sound drop of Polly Walnuts calling Christopher a fucking baby, is my point. My other point is, it's a great podcast, lean and gripping. Catch and Kill. As difficult and infuriating as Ronan Farrow's account of trying to report the Harvey Weinstein story slash stories is, it's also a thriller. Not least because the reader is thrilled when that turd monster finally ends up in bracelets. In my review, I talked about, quote, Farrow's ability to make the story, which is the story and the story of the story, so readable. The process of reporting, the pitching, the texting during dinner parties, we're all kind of conditioned from All the President's Men to feel that it's exciting per se. But in reality, often it's just grinding, not interesting to watch or read about. It helps that the stakes in ATPM and here are high, but Farrow is also skilled at switching among scenes, moving from background explainer material to revealing quotes to quick meetings that set up later events. It's harder than Farrow makes it look to do, particularly when the storyteller is himself part of the story. End quote. Patreon tipsters picked that one for me to read in November. You will rip through it in a day. Although I would advise you to take many breaks, to scream into a pillow, or watch cartoons if you need to. Next up in a run of three of the outstanding books I read this year is Down City, which is not from this year, but which I did discuss this year with the great Alex Segura in episode 108. The equally great Leah Carroll's Down City is a memoir of her childhood after her mother's murder when Carroll was just 4 years old. The narrative, which also includes her alcoholic father's decline, is rough going, but the storytelling is amazing. Every now and then I would just say out loud to the page I was on, "That's so good I want to kick something." Carroll is a less is more pro stylist whose transitions are next level. She has such an ear for how we all change our own stories over time. You don't really even have to dig this genre to dig this book, which is just as pleasurable for students of good writing as it is bracing for readers of crimoirs. That's Carroll, like Carroll Gardens, and the book is Down City. Furious Hours. I bonus book reviewed this one back in September, and I think I liked it a lot more than the median review on Goodreads would suggest. I really liked it. Like, the more I think about it, the more I want to, like, march into Casey Sepp's DMs and be like, "So how'd you do that? Tell me everything. Also tell me more stories just like this. Chop, chop." From my review, quote, Casey Sepp is actually keeping four stories in the air in Furious Hours. The Reverend Maxwell and his diabolically clever murder schemes. The vengeance Robert Burns enacted and how it would be adjudicated. The attorney who represented them both while trying to have a political career as a Deep South liberal, and everything that brought Harper Lee to that crossroads with them. End quote. And that last thing? Like, it's a true crime book about writer's block. And it's really good. And that Sepp can do all of it in under 300 pages? I just felt like more people needed to be talking about this book. If you read it, come talk about it with me on Best Evidence, and if you haven't read it yet, read it. It's great. Also great, The Inventor. Let's face it, Elizabeth Holmes slash Theranos content does not have to be much good for me to still enjoy it. Alex Gibney's HBO documentary, The Inventor, is in fact much good, although it could have been even better. Stephanie and I discussed that in episode 89. I'm never going to tell you not to read Bad Blood, but if you still haven't gotten fascinated by Holmes and her dumb, fancy turtlenecks and weird baritone, The Inventor's the most economical, as it were, place to start with that case. Leaving Neverland. It's weird how these properties end up clustering, as Leaving Neverland is another HBO property. This one's a multi-parter. It's also weird a little bit that this was from 2019. It really seems so long ago that this aired and that everyone was talking about believing Robson and Safechuck, or not believing them. I really hope that between this, Unbelievable, and Surviving R. Kelly, among others, last year was a year that we learned something compassionate about the actions of survivors of abuse, which can seem self-defeating and or duplicitous, but which are actually completely explicable in the aftermath. Leaving Neverland was a difficult watch, and viewers with triggers should take care. but it was testimony worth hearing. Lorena. Another miniseries from earlier in the year that seems like it came out in 2017. 2019 was a long one in so many ways, and not just culturally. Anyway, Jordan Peele produced this one for Amazon Prime, and it's an excellent case study in how to return to and unpack a story that we as a culture may have gotten wrong the first time. Lorena is a good overview of the case, a good analysis of why the focus at the time was on the violence done to John Wayne Bobbitt's penis and not to his wife, and who crime stories ought to, quote, belong to. Prime members, if you missed this one in February, you can give it a look now. Murder Mountain. This one may not have gotten as much play as it deserved either, and technically it's a 2018 property, but Josh Seaman's Netflix docuseries on Northern California's Humboldt County, the multiple disappearances and murders in the mountains there, and the local marijuana industry's going legal growing pains wasn't one I got to until early in 2019, and it's one that you should get to too. I love Seaman's work because the way his mind follows a mystery is kind of the same way mine does, and this one's handsomely shot to boot. Norco 80. I'm pretty sure I saw this, which was one of the August bonus book review topics last year, on a best of decade list? Maybe at Crime Reads? Wherever it was, I was gratified to see it made it. More people should read this book. Norco 80 is the story of, quote, five heavily armed young men, led by an apocalyptic born-again Christian, who attempted a bank robbery that turned into one of the most violent criminal events in U.S. history, per the book jacket. This robbery also turned into a dozens of miles long crime scene, and led to one of the longest and most expensive trials in California history, and this is a state that presided over People v. Manson and Simpson. Author Peter Houlihan's prose is direct but flavorful, and it's not an easy feat to keep this kind of 75 miles an hour account moving while also keeping all the players and their relative physical positions straight for a spatial relations dummy like myself. Houlihan does it no problem. The editing is maybe not the greatest. There are some squashy descriptions that should have been cut, and typos abound for some reason, but it's well enough paced that after a while you just stop noticing that stuff. And it's worth it for a story you've probably not heard before, told with flair. Savage Appetites. I talked about Rachel Monroe's book recently enough that I won't bore regular listeners with a rehash, but although the book isn't perfect, it's really stuck with me. I found myself referring to it frequently since I finished it. The publisher's copy on Amazon says, quote, Rachel Monroe interrogates the appeal of true crime through four narratives of fixation. Each woman, Monroe argues, represents and identifies with a particular archetype that provides an entryway into true crime. Through these four cases, she traces the history of American crime through the growth of forensic science, the evolving role of victims, the satanic panic, the rise of online detectives, and the long shadow of the Columbine shooting. In a combination of personal narrative, reportage, and a sociological examination of violence and media in the 20th and 21st century, Savage Appetites scrupulously explores empathy, justice, and the persistent appeal of violence, end quote. Oh, that's a little much, maybe, but that middle bit about the tracing of history and other true crime preoccupations, I would say trends, but that feels a bit flip. That part is where Monroe is a Viking. She'll hit pause on her ostensible section subject to take you back 30 years, or 50, then bring you back into the story she started with, having brought you up to date on a pertinent subject like sentencing laws or the charges against Roman Polanski. Thought-provoking is one of those nothing burger descriptors in a book review sometimes that can mean that you liked it, but it annoyed you at the same time, but you just don't want to say that? That's not what I mean. I actually mean that it's thought-provoking, and I would actually recommend the audiobook experience for this one. I'd also recommend not getting a dog, because mine barks all the time. Shut up! Say Nothing. Patrick Radden Keefe's account of one widow's disappearing in the midst of the troubles in Belfast is extraordinary. I just finished it yesterday, and it elbowed a not-quite-as-good podcast off the list right at the end here. As I said in my review for Best Evidence subscribers, this book might present initially as history homework if you, like I did, go in with no grounding in this part of Irish history. but Rad and Keefe will get you caught up and in that particular New Yorker way that doesn't make you feel dumb and explains it in a way that will stick. My only quibble is that I wanted it to be even longer, which probably means it's exactly right. Surviving R. Kelly. This is what kicked off 2019 in true crime for me, and as we head into 2020, I'm contemplating the property again, which may give the first season an unfair advantage on this list, because I've seen screeners of Part 2, The Reckoning. I'll be talking more in our next episode with Mark Blankenship about the meta-investigation The Reckoning does into the compound crimes committed by men in power to avoid prosecution. But the first iteration of Surviving R. Kelly was powerful on its own. Like so many documentary stories like it, its value wasn't just in the quality of its narrative, but the qualities of its narrative, the testimony it gave, the voices it let be heard. And like so many on this list, it's not an easy watch. If you didn't see the first season, you could start with The Reckoning and be caught up quickly. But part of the point, I think, is to hear the stories of these women and girls all the way through and acknowledge by doing so what they've had to live with all these years. That is on Lifetime, and I believe that is available on the app. Tell Me Who I Am. From Mahida Gajanan's explainer for Time, with apologies if I've mispronounced their name, quote, Tell Me Who I Am opens on a tragedy. In 1982, Alex Lewis woke up from a three-month coma after a motorcycle crash and could remember nothing about his life except for one thing, the face of his identical twin brother, Marcus. The new documentary about the brothers, which debuted on Netflix on October 18th, gradually unspools the consequences of a decision made by Marcus, suddenly the holder of all of his brother's memories, to paint a picture of a happy life, withholding the reality, end quote. That reality begins to take a dim shape for the viewer as she watches that brings to mind, and I am very sorry to make this reference, some of the grubbier corners of the V.C. Andrews oeuvre. And then said viewer thinks to herself, that can't be a thing, it's just me, it's not going to be that Baroque. And then it is. As I noted in episode 118, quote, to call this true crime is not really accurate, although crimes were definitely committed. To say much more about it is not really possible without spoiling it, because the point of Tell Me Who I Am, mostly, is the journey to information and the suspense created for Alex and the viewer, almost unbearable at times, by Marcus's decision to withhold it. At no time while I was watching Tell Me Who I Am was I tempted to Google to find out the facts of the case or what the book contained, which, as regular listeners know, is a recommendation in and of itself. End quote. This is less of a time commitment than some on the list, and I'd love to hear what you think of it. Again, that's on Netflix. Also on Netflix, Unbelievable. From Wikipedia, quote, a dramatization of the 2008-2011 Washington and Colorado serial rape cases, Unbelievable follows Marie, a teenager who was charged with lying about having been raped, and the two detectives who followed a twisting path to arrive at the truth. The program draws from an unbelievable story of rape, a Pulitzer Prize-winning article by T. Christian Miller and Ken Armstrong for ProPublica and the Marshall Project. I've linked to that article in the show notes. That was an end quote, by the way. But you should absolutely watch the series, although, sing it with me if you know the words, the material is tough and it is not eased by the raw performance from Caitlin Dever as Marie. Unbelievable is, like I said, difficult to get through, but at the same time, satisfying as a procedural, and it feels like a breakthrough in how women in law enforcement are and are portrayed. That not everything about how they do their jobs comes back to their womanhood, but that some things do, and that those things inform or detract because they're people and cops and mothers and not mothers. You'll want Merritt Weaver to play everyone in everything after watching Unbelievable, which is a mild frustration, and I cried a few times and often wanted to scream while watching it myself, but it's an amazing document. Not quite the best of the year, but it's in the conversation. Not really in the conversation as much is We Are Columbine. Director and Columbine High School graduate Laura Farber's personal look at living with the 1999 massacre features a handful of her classmates. The movie didn't get a ton of attention, or at least I wasn't hearing much about it, besides my conversation with Toby Ball in episode 93, but you can find that one on HBO. And last, but definitely not least, When They See Us. Only Ava DuVernay's unflinching scripted series about the Central Park Five kept Unbelievable out of the top spot for the year. Gerald Jerome as Corey Wise is a revelation, and in fact, his flashback scene with Isis King might be the most beautiful, sorrowful thing I saw on all of TV last year. This series is also on Netflix, and you owe it to yourself to watch it, especially if you remember the case vaguely from growing up in the New York area, but you hadn't begun to understand the real crimes at issue. And that's my 19 for 19, guys. Happy New Year again. Thanks so much for listening. If you're hungover, scrambled egg sandwich, take care of it. And I've got some other great discussions and advice in store for 2020. Starting with next time, when Mark Blankenship returns to talk about Surviving R. Kelly Part 2, The Reckoning, as well as singer-songwriter Alison Moore's Crimoir, Blood, A Memoir. So get that one out of the library or with your Audible credit now and join the discussion. After that, I'll be digging into yet another glut of Aaron Hernandez material, and then we return to the Watergate. In the meantime, if you've got a tip for me, I'm on social media at Blotter Presents on both Twitter and Instagram. You can call or text the Blotter tip line at 919-75-CRIME. And Eve Beatty and I bring you news and reviews every weekday in our newsletter, Best Evidence. You can subscribe now at bestevidence.fyi. I'm your host, Sarah D. Bunting, and I confidentially inform you that I hope you'll tune in next time.